No one really knows Ron Van Dam. He's an enigma, wrapped in a mystery, cloaked in secrets, stuffed in between two pieces of French toast encased in a pancake, smothered in cheese and deep-fried until golden brown, then duct-taped into a rusty toolbox, packed into a used Amazon shipping container with gaffer's tape, and mailed overnight to a bunker in Siberia where it's kept in a locked vault, whose combination is known only to a mute priest with a bad memory. So yeah, he's sort of a keeps-to-himself kind of guy. You're listening to that man of mystery, Ron Van Dam, on New England Broadcasting.
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, good night. It's the Ron Van Dam Show.
Okay, whatever.
Hold on tight, things can get a bit weird, if you like that sort of thing.
Welcome to the program. It is the Ron Van Dam Show. I'm the one in the middle. And relax. It's all right. No, relax. Take it easy. I'm not going to hurt you much. Come a little bit closer to the speaker. That's it, my pretty. Try this poison apple that I have in my hand, of which I outreach upon you. Hey, don't look directly into the sun, you idiot. You're going to burn your cornea and your iris and all those people. Don't do it. Listen to me. Fading out on the theme music. How you doing? Good to be with you today. I don't know what day of the week it is. It really doesn't make any difference. So, whatever. My favorite word. I'm using it a lot lately. Anyway, thanks for coming around here today. My guest later on in the show has written a book, as many of them do. And, you know, I was thinking, I wrote one book in my lifetime. When I was a kid, this is a funny story that you won't appreciate. When I was a kid in high school, I wrote 8 books. Of course, they were never published, because back then, when I was a kid, to get something published, you had to be, like, really good. Now you don't. Now you can just write something, put it on Amazon, and say, I wrote a book, you know, so, okay, it's okay. I mean, there's nothing bad about that. But I wrote 8 books when I was a kid, and I still have them, and every once in a while I read them just to see where my head was at when I was in high school. Let me tell you something, ladies and gentlemen of the jury. It is fascinating to see where your head was at. So I wrote these 8 books. My guest today wrote a book. Actually, it's an incredible book, and we'll talk to her a little bit later on. It's about growing up. It's about your adolescence, the things that you went through as a boy or as a girl or both. We'll find out and see how much we can connect with the thesis of that book. But my point is that it was fascinating for me. I don't know if you have anything like that, anything from your childhood that actually represents what you were thinking, not what you were doing, but what you were thinking in your freaking head when you were a child. What thoughts went through your head? What did you believe was going on? What things affected you? It's a fascinating thing. And there are 2 things in life that I missed and that my children missed. Of course, humanity is one of them. But it is the ability to go back in time and see where you were at, like really being there, not just from your memories or something like that. I have some love letters with my first love when I was, I think I was about 17 or 18 years old. I was 17. And I had a first love, and we were deeply in love, man. And she was, looking back at it, would never have worked out. But at that time, I still have some of those love letters, and I shouldn't really have them because it's wrong to do that. But they were part of my history. And I read these love letters, and the emotion in these letters that I had for this girl, And it also gave me an idea of where my head was at in those days, what things were important to me, what things affected me. It was me pouring my soul into this letter to this girl. And we wrote back and forth because she lived in Coral Gables, Florida, and I lived in New Jersey at the time. So, you know, that was our relationship was through the letters. And then we did hook up later on and actually kind of live together. But and then it didn't work out. So, you know, the first of everything is exciting. It's romantic. It's symbolic. But it doesn't always work out. When you start a business, kind of usually doesn't end up the way that you started it. If that business is even still in existence. Maybe you started another business and that worked out. Maybe you were married once and that didn't work out. Maybe you were married again and that did work out. That kind of thing. So, you know, you can't bank on the immediate. You can only bank on the lessons that you have from the immediate if there are to be any taken, and there usually is. So my point is, Ron, what's your point? You talk and you don't go anywhere. All right, listen to me. The point is that if you can find things from your past that actually express where your head was at, it's a fascinating thing. So these two things I missed out on. One is a diary. And many times I spelled that wrong and I thought I missed out on a dairy. But it's diary. You know, you shift those letters around and it's like a whole different meaning. I didn't have a diary. I didn't do that. I do it now in my appointment book. I write down my thoughts during the day, the things I did and what happened. I write that down now in my appointment book. And I do from time to time go back in time because I've been doing this for about 20 years. I have all those books, 20 years of appointment books in great detail. And sometimes I visit them and I see where I was at that time in my life. When you get older, 20 years is like all the same thing. When you're younger, 4 years is impactfully different. Every moment is different. Every second is a new adventure. It's one's entire emotional life packed into 4 years. It's a fascinating time. I wish I had a diary from that time, but I don't. Girls do it sometimes, but they don't write stuff down enough to display their emotions necessarily. But I didn't do it at all. All I have are these love letters and some other things that are left over, but not on a daily basis, so I don't know where my head was at. But I do have these 8 books that I wrote. The books are about, I'd say, about 70 pages long each, which is fairly lengthy. It wasn't about my life. It was about these, they were fictional novels. But when you do that, any writer knows that when you write a novel, a fictional piece, your life is in there. There's a piece of you in every novel that you write. And I usually ask this question of most authors, you know, like, what was this book? I know it's not about you, but was it about you? You know what I mean? So I have that. But again, if I could do it all over again, I probably won't be able to. I would love to have found my emotions from my childhood. And I think you probably do too. And you're probably saying, Ron, wow, I wish I did that too, Ron. We have so much in common. Well, actually, we don't. But maybe we have that aspect in common. So if you have children, here's what I suggest you do. And they're young enough. Let's say starting around 10 years old, going all the way up to your early 20s, write down the stuff. Keep the stuff. And not just online in a file on a zip drive. Oh. No, your writings, your handwriting. Flow your emotions into a book or a diary or something. I'll tell you, you'll find that fascinating when you get to be older. Because life is a, you know, I don't know who said this. I think a lot of people said it. It's like on a tombstone or on a gravesite, you know, it's the year you were born and the year you died. and that dash in the middle, you know, like 1982 to 2036, that dash in the middle is your life. It's everything in between, that dash. And it goes as fast sometimes as that dash. Unless you're in a business meeting and your boss won't shut up, that dash is like really long. But it's all about the dash, kids. It's all about the dash. I think everybody in one's lifetime, and you have time to do it. If you're listening to the show, you're still alive and you still can do this. Everybody should write a book. Not for publishing, not for other people to read, but for yourself. Write about something that that's very significant to you. You can show it to others or not, but just do it. It's a human thing to expound your emotions upon paper. Here's the problem with that. We don't write books on paper anymore. You write letters on paper, but we don't do that anymore. We use keyboards and computers. And that's kind of a cold vehicle. But it's the vehicle of our times. It's all you freaking got. So that's what you got to do. But your mind is not a vehicle. Your mind is still fresh and just as old as the minds were in the 15th century BC. Your mind is the creator. Get that stuff out of your head and put it down somewhere and log it and save it. Save it to your desktop. You'll find it fascinating. You'll also find it very cathartic. You learn things about yourself that no one can draw it out of you except you, because you're the author of the stuff. You can go to a therapist for 30 years and sit there and talk about your life and your feelings, and the therapist will say their trademark stuff. Well, how do you feel about that? Our time is up. Here's your bill. That's what they say. But all they're doing is just drawing stuff out of you. So draw it out of yourself. And by writing a little novel or something like that, you're doing that. You're drawing it out of yourself. And you will find that with any story that you will end up writing, you'll find yourself in it. And you'll find yourself having to talk about yourself and having to take your emotions, let them flow out of your head, through your arms, down to your fingers, onto the keyboard and onto that screen, whatever you use as the vehicle, and save it. And you'll find it fascinating. I did that 8 books worth in high school. And I thank God that I did, because there's a lot in there. See where my head was at. And oddly enough, when I do read these books, and I do it every like 10 years, maybe when I come across them in the basement, I will say to myself, oh, geez, I've changed. Some people will say, wow, I'm still the same person I was when I was in high school. Other people will say, God, who is that person? Who is that person? My head was in a totally different place. Either way, it's a fascinating exercise. And I hope that you someday do that. And encourage your children to take their thoughts and use their minds and log them, catalog them. It's a great therapeutic thing for anybody. All right. Also, eating cheese is very nice too. Cheese is wonderful. The only problem with cheese is can't go to the bathroom for a couple of years. But other than that, it's good stuff. You know, only my show can transition from a cathartic, therapeutic concept to cheese. I don't understand it myself. I just don't understand it myself. I still marvel at the fact that Chinese cooking and Japanese cooking and Asian cooking does not involve cheese, and I can't. They're missing out on so much. Egg foo young parmesan, could be tasty. Could be, maybe not, maybe yes. Lo mein and tomato sauce doesn't sound good, but you're missing out. A little grated cheese on top of that. Seriously, I'm not kidding you. I'm not kidding you. Egg foo young, smothered in Swiss cheese. Chicken chow mein. Chicken chow mein. With provolone. Oh my God, what an idea that is. Is that fusion or what? Give it a shot. It's absolutely ridiculous, but give it a shot. Now I want cheese. I went to a cheese store recently. There aren't a lot of them. Especially cheese store. Where someone actually knows their cheeses. That's where you find cheeses. Are you on a religious quest to find Jesus? Oh, no, you're in a cheese store. You found cheeses. Oh, no, sounds the same. I know, but so different, isn't it? I told this story like 20 years ago on the air, and I'll tell it very, very quickly. There's a supermarket near me. It's rather expensive, and they have a cheese department. They have a whole area that has all these cheeses. And there's a cheese manager, and when you walk in on this on the wall, they have the manager of the various departments because they're all proud of these people, and they have the manager of the cheese department. And I always like wonder like what was your prior education? Were you graduated from produce to be cheese manager? How long did you have to work in cheese before you were in cheese management? You got to know your cheeses. You really do. You got to know your Gouda from your provolone. You got to know your blue cheese. What's with blue cheese? Looks like someone left it out too long. But no, it's supposed to be like that. Now you're asking me to eat cheese that is no good? Yeah, it's tasty. It's weird. Anything that turns blue that was originally white? I don't think so. Blue cheese? Tasty. Very, very strange department, the cheese department. And then I'm wondering, like, you know, is this a career? Is this something you go to college for? Did you major in cheese? Exotic cheese? I mean, where did this come from? Where do you go from there? Where do you go? What do you tell your friend? What do you do for a living, Bob? I manage cheese. All right. Did it give you a lot of trouble? No, I order the cheese, and then I put the cheese out on the display and so that you know which cheeses are where. I have your soft cheese, and then the hard cheese is over here. You got your cheese infused with red wine. Very, very tasty. Comes from the Orient. And I could go on all day about cheese. When's the last time you went to the bathroom? Never did. Never went to the bathroom. Ever. Ever. Sometimes I think I do, but then I sit down and I don't. Yeah, cheese binds me up. But cheese manager, what am I supposed to do? Nothing. All right, my guest joins us momentarily. First, we'll take a commercial break, and then we'll take a look at adolescence. And could be pretty cool. I don't know. I'm not too sure. First, there's this.
Are you the sort of person who feels vicarious excitement at the prospect of a robust discount? Then you need to pay us a visit at Jerome Cherrington's Emporium of Preposterous Values. Each and every day, our standard pricing model is an absolute affront to common retailing practices and could indeed be seen as an indication of mental instability. Consider, if you will, a 24-pack of your favorite coffee pods, if one happens to drink such a thing, a mere $2.99. Is that sensible in the least? No, I tell you, it is not. And what of this? Common t-shirts with witty sayings upon them, suitable for men, women, and children, depending upon how you've raised them, 10 for $6. This is uncanny pricing that quite simply flies in the face of all possible reason, and the only explanation for this behavior on my part is that I am not sane, frankly. Do not take my word for it. Instead, find your way here to Jerome Cherrington's Emporium of Preposterous Values, just off the motorway and beyond the roundabout, where our everyday retailing decisions are simply unnatural.
Aida Salazar joins us now. She's an author and is the author of a very interesting book called Ultraviolet. It's a boy's version of the common middle grade verse novel, The Moon Within. Is that right?
Yeah, it is. It's kind of a loose companion to my first novel, The Moon Within,
right,
which was a story about coming of age.
Yeah. Now, this is coming of age from a boy's point of view, a girl's point of view, or can it be applied to either?
Yeah, well, no, this is definitely from a boy's point of view, but yes, it's meant for all readers, as is my first one, even though it comes from a girl's point of
right.
view, it's really meant for everybody.
Yeah. Well, in life, you know, no matter who it comes from is something you have to deal with. So, yeah, that's true.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. Now, I understand that you were inspired by a very close relative of yours.
Yes. The story about a little boy who falls in love for the very first time and sees everything in ultraviolet and gets his heart broken and has to deal with all of the emotions along with like all of the feelings that happen when you're growing up and kind of leaving your child body into your adult body. So yes, that story was inspired by my son. But after I'd written The Moon Within, my son and his best friend, Mario, said, Ms. Aida, when are you going to write The Sun Within? And I said, I'm queen.
There you go.
That's a great point. And my son's like, yes, when are you going to write a story about me? And when my son fell in love for the first time, he was actually in sixth grade.
Yeah.
And he had a girlfriend, and the girlfriend broke his heart. It touched me so much. It was such a hard thing. And, you know, my son and I have a really good relationship. And so I was there and, like, helped him process some of what he was feeling and try to kind of make him understand. Yeah. And I also saw the potential for toxicity that could happen when boys are not allowed to feel.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was the the beginning.
Yeah. And the vehicle is through other people. I mean, it's not an autobiographical thing about your son. It's an influence. Yeah.
It was inspired by, but the story is totally fictional. I mean, there's a little bit of, I wouldn't say magic, but you know, the boy sees everything in ultraviolet colors and so there's a little bit of, I don't know what to call it, magical realism there. And so, yeah,
it's got a little bit of everything there. It makes it more plausible to the younger child of our time. I mean, go on.
It really is kind of like a way to kind of use metaphor. It's really poetry, you know, like use color to show feelings. Figurative language to really kind of like paint a picture of what the feeling might be.
Let me ask you about that. Because you're I understand that you're you call yourself a feminist, and of course you're a mother. So you have certain viewpoints. I remember my first love in the grade school area, and it was not sexual, and I don't know if it was hormonal or not in another sense, but it wasn't sexual. It was just like that person made me feel like incredible, but not, it wasn't a body thing. I mean, is that accurate or is it a mixture? How does that work?
In here, in the story, it's very much emotional. Though he does say, I mean, I try to be very humorous in the story because puberty is very humorous to me. Mm-hmm. I think it's hilarious.
It is.
But yes, it is. And so like, so we, so yeah, so I try to kind of, focus on that, like the first kiss. It's called, there's a poem in here called, Jagged Spine Kiss.
Yeah.
And it's how, you know, what he feels the moment that he gets kissed for the first time. And how right before that, he really, like, it didn't dawn on him that that is something that boyfriends and girlfriends do.
Yeah.
Like, he was like, what? That's actually something that you do? Like, I like to hold her hand. I like to, like, you know, be around her, you know? Like,
Just be around her.
It didn't dawn. So it's, so it's just like, it's about that in-between space, right? That you know, it's a delicate tightrope of being a child.
Yeah. What I find most fascinating in the book is the results of that, and that involves it not happening anymore, rejection, no more of that.
Mm-hmm.
That's the tough part of life. I mean, that's the real hanger there for somebody. And I like the way that you get into that too.
Yeah, that's precisely it. I mean, I really wanted to show boys, especially, and all readers that we have this really expansive emotional landscape.
Yeah.
And that, you know, boys are victims of patriarchy as well, because, you know, of course, there's lots of, you know, hurt that happens to women and girls and gender expansive people, but boys also suffer because they're not allowed. We train them so young not to feel, not to, and to like suck it up, not cry. And really the only expression that is acceptable from boys is violence.
Yeah.
And when they lose, right, they get mad, they storm, you know, like that is an acceptable, just kind of universal in patriarchy. But I really wanted to show one boy's struggle and a community's struggle in trying to rewrite that, in trying to understand that, you know, we have to learn how to lose. We need to be graceful when we lose. We need to also, you know, learn about consent, about you know, knowing what is kind and you know what boundaries are.
Yeah.
These are all things that I think are so important for boys and all people to know.
Well, yeah,
because,
I mean,
of course, girls.
Yeah, well, you're absolutely right because it's a pent up emotion. And girls may cry it out, and if boys don't cry it out, how do you let it out? And it's through anger. So you're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, girls have that too.
Of course. Yeah. I mean, that's part of being human, right?
Yeah.
That we have all these different emotions. But I think, you know, this trying to be able to kind of come to terms with that and learning how to transfer it.
Yeah.
And transform it into something beautiful and how to love oneself in the end is, I think, what's going to help us as a society, you know, because what we see in our homes, the violence that we see in our homes, the violence that we see on the streets, the violence that we see on the world stage, you know, the wars, the genocide, the things that we're seeing are all very, are these incredible expressions of hatred and violence.
I think
that they're unexpressed wounds.
Well, yes.
Right? The wounds of childhood, the wounds of past, you know, inflictions.
Well, you're right.
Pain.
That's absolutely true. Yeah, it's a combination of that and being environmentally taught that's what you should be doing, and that's wrong. It's a different way of approaching it, and it's deeper, and it's more real, and it's through a novel and through characters, and it's a beautiful expression. And I'm glad you did this. Ultraviolet is available to everybody at this time. It's released.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's published through Scholastic, and so
cool.
It's available in all the stores and shop indie if you can, because mm-hmm. we've got to support our indie bookstores
yes.
or any of your favorite online retailers.
Cool.
So, yeah.
And how can people follow your writings and things like that?
Yeah, you could follow me. I'm mostly on Instagram at Aida, A-I-D-A underscore yeah. write.
Uh-huh.
Or you can visit my website at aidasalazar.com.
Perfect. Can I spell your name for people?
Sure, of course.
It's yes. AIDASALAZAR.com. Perfect. I love it. It's a fantastic book, and thank you for doing that. Good deal. It's been a pleasure speaking to you. No, the book's, it's funny, it's fun, it's poignant. It's we're all going to connect to it, being male or female. It doesn't make any difference. Thank you again, Aida. Yeah. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, all right. Thank you to my guests, and thank you to you. I'll be back again tomorrow with a brand new program. Will you please join me tomorrow as well? And if you're listening to this on one of those social media things, and there's a button for like or follow, would you please just hit every button you can find that's positive in my sense? I would appreciate it, but more so, my social media manager would really appreciate it. She really, really likes that stuff. She gets off on it. I not so much, but let's try to make her happy, okay? So until tomorrow, take care of yourself. I wish you peace.